Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structure and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Augmented World Expo 2026, I'm going to be talking to another company about location-based entertainment. And so there's the whole LBE space that was this year at Augmented World Expo on the far right-hand side. And so there was one piece called Abyss Vault that was done by Brett Gaylor and Mike Wozniacki. So I previously met Brett way back in the day when we were both video bloggers back in like 2004 and 5. We were both kind of in this community and looking at the frontiers of video back before there was even YouTube. So Brett has continued into immersive documentary and has been doing some projects like Fortune, as well as with Privacy and Mozilla, working on different aspects there. And so this was a turn into more of kind of world building and location-based entertainment. I think when you look at the overall sectors in XR, LBE is actually one of those sectors that seems to be growing. So there are some momentum there for people finding profitable businesses. And so they went to some of these different communities where they describe it in this conversation as a little bit more relational, to kind of build relations, to be able to have partners and distributors to be able to help get some of their content out there. And it's so well done in terms of, like, you feel like you're going into the bottom of an ocean, and it's a collaborative game that can be played with up to six people at the same time. And so a lot of time these kind of wave shooters, you end up playing and you're not really like engaging with anybody in any meaningful fashion. You're just kind of like non-verbally going through and shooting a bunch of zombies that are coming at you. And they wanted to flip that on its head, where they're trying to have like no guns at all, but they do have some kind of shooting mechanics with being able to shoot these robots that are flying at you. But for the most part, it's a kind of escape room type of puzzle mechanic where you're trying to find the blending of light. People each have different colors of light, and then you're able to have different people collaborate in different ways to be able to do different tasks. And so it was really quite fun in the sense that it had this kind of social collaborative dynamic, but also the world building was exquisite. You were able to kind of take this whole journey into this underground world, and just really compelling artistic direction. And it felt really vast. Like, they didn't have a lot of space, and they really used the most of their space in the way that they're kind of have like moving platforms and elevators, and you just feel like you're being transported into a whole other realm when you go into this experience. So really kind of what you want of immersion and engaging gameplay. So I think it's really, really well done. So looking forward to see where they take it here in the future. One comment before we start to really dig into it is that one of the things they showed me afterwards, was they had this whole like plan to be able to have, you know, like a dinner and the different rooms. And a lot of it was like trying to figure out the workflow and the different business models to have other things other than just the location-based entertainment experience. And so I don't know if they've already got a place that's already laid out. The other kind of model is a little bit more of a vast open room or something like Excurio that has like this giant open space. But imagine that you have like six different experiences that are going at the same time. And so you may have like a lane that you're able to go down rather than like a big vast space, because they already have like the distance of that. You're kind of like walking around in circles in this same space. But if you think about kind of walking more in a distance in a straight line over more vast parts of space, but still gating people through that, then I think that's another possibility to see how they may be able to get much more higher throughput with something like an Excurio type of setup. But again, they'd have to perhaps re-architect it or work more closely with them to kind of make it work for that. Because six people for half hour, you have to kind of weigh in the onboarding and offboarding. So you're looking at like a 45 minute slot for six people. So that's maybe like 24 people over like 3 hours. And you're basically at like eight people per hour, rather than this threshold of like 150 people per hour is what like Excurio is able to do. So it ends up being a lot of this throughput challenge of how do you get enough people through it to be able to justify it as a business that's sustainable over time in a way that isn't too expensive, because the less people you have per hour, the more you have to charge in order to make it all make sense. So that's kind of like the math reality of some of the things they have to sort out. But I do think that they have the potential to translate what they have into systems that may be able to get like much higher throughput. And one of the things that I had heard from Jules Rimbaud from Excurio in the previous interview was that they are actually looking for more of these types of like engaging, interacting types of experiences. And so free roaming VR that's fully embodied, you kind of want to be able to also have ways that you're collaborating and working with each other. So yeah, they're really at the cusp of the sweet spot of location-based VR, and really, really enjoyed their experience called Abyss Vault that was being shown there at Augmented World Expo. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Brett and Mike happened on Thursday, June 18th, 2026 at the Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
I'm Brett Gaylor. I'm a creative director, producer, maker, enthusiast.
I'm Mike Wasniewski. I'm the president of HoloLab Studio, and we've been making immersive experiences and theme park rides using XR technology for 10 years or so.
Great. Maybe you could each give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, so I've been making interactive and immersive work for about 20 years, mostly in the social impact documentary space. But in the last 5 years or so, I've sort of transitioned more into immersive. I've always kind of like loved VR and wanted to do it. And so when I joined HoloLabs, we really started focusing on the free roam space because it kind of took what we had done in theme park attractions and what we learned about space, and we're able to kind of translate that into VR. And that's kind of when it really clicked for me about what VR could do.
I've been in the intelligent systems space and 3D environment space for, 20 years now or so. And so I came into attractions and XR and VR more from art installations and like physical theater even. And we started, and audio actually, and we started developing virtual environments in order to understand space for audio systems. And then I somehow got involved in the attractions industry around 2017. We started working on the Mario Kart ride for Universal Studios, which ended up involving an augmented reality display. And sort of from there, we started thinking about VR a lot more. And we've always been very interested in video games and game development. So our company has grown with a bunch of different game developers who have encouraged us to dabble in play and entertainment and amusement in space. And so I think this game that we've developed here is like a culmination of all these things, a little bit of theater, like a little bit of immersive visuals, audio,
Fun
gameplay, and interesting play with game mechanics and interactivity.
So maybe give me a bit more context for where did Abyss Vault begin?
I think Abyss Vault began actually kind of at one of these trade shows. We go to IAPA, which is the International Attractions and Amusement Producers Association, I believe. It's kind of a gathering of folks that work in theme parks and that kind of thinking.
It's usually in Florida, right?
The U.S. one is in Florida, and that's the biggest, but it's also close to Europe one. Mike just got back from the one in Hong Kong. And we saw these kind of emerging platforms for free roam attractions. And what was exciting to us at that time was that we could really kind of approach those platforms directly and propose games, in contrast to, you know, other VR ecosystems like Meta, where it's this kind of store model that you're not talking to a human, there's an algorithm involved, and it's just really hard to break into those spaces. Whereas these were kind of more emergent and relationship based. And so we built relationships with those distributors and then started to iterate on a game that we thought would make sense for operators of these venues. And what we sort of saw was that people were craving something that required collaboration and social interaction. And so that was the kind of driving force. And then we, of course, sort of iterated on concepts and world building and game design, but trying to think about who this was for and what they would want and need was the initial spark.
Yeah, maybe you could give me a context for some of the prior pieces that you've produced. Is this the first one or have you had prior ones?
This is the first free roam VR game we've made. We have worked on VR projects in the past. The Mario Kart ride that we worked on for Universal Studios has augmented reality. So we've done a lot of virtual reality simulation of rides like that and other VR simulations of other rides and experiences. But this is actually the first free roam game that we've developed.
Okay. And so what has been some of the reactions you've received so far?
I mean, people love it. Like, usually what we notice is when people put on the headsets and they see themselves in a full body avatar and they can walk around, there's just like a huge giggle party that happens immediately. And people kind of like laugh and want to like give each other high fives and walk around and sort of like look at themselves. And so that's the initial thing. And then we guide them kind of deeper into the story of the game is that you're this kind of rebel force that's going into this underwater vault where an evil empire kind of force has secured the last remaining bits of life on a desolate planet. Right. And so we kind of like tease that out in little drips. But the reaction of people is generally like just being wowed that they can walk around, that they kind of feel like they're in this huge space, even though they're only in a 6x6 or 20x20 foot space. But we do a lot of spatial design, Mike likes to call them tricks, you know, to sort of layer the space in on itself in interesting ways. So if you can imagine like Tetris pieces where this space that you've been in can fit into this space over here, if perhaps we take an elevator or we have a moving platform or we flood it or all of these things that we kind of have iterated on, that's kind of just always something that our game designer Benji was thinking about, was like, how can we make this feel big? How can we make it feel like you've traveled a huge long way? And even though we might just be standing next to each other in real life, how do we make it feel like that person is like way across this vast cavern in this underwater environment that's also very artful and beautiful? Our art director, Scott Douglas, worked really hard to make it like quite visually distinct and like really art directed. Like this is a very, I don't know, you played it. Would you agree that it's art directed?
Yeah, it's very beautiful. And it also gave me this sense of the, you know, it's not a big space here, but when I'm in the experience, it feels like a space that's like 10 times to 20 times larger in a way that you do this kind of like either impossible space. I mean, not as much impossible space, but at least walking around and using platforms and elevators to, even if we are physically close to each other, there were parts where we were independently being teleported and had this sense of like I'm waving across to them on whether the other side, even though like it would be 2 to 3 times further than they actually are physically, but it still had this really nice feeling of vastness of space. And I think the other important thing is that it had a collaborative gameplay mechanic where you have these flashlights where it's RGB colors that can be used to combine the lights to have different combinations that are required to solve different puzzles. And so it kind of requires this sort of collaborative social gameplay to solve the puzzles as a group. So yeah, just love to hear any insight into the process of developing this type of collaborative gameplay and getting people to really interact and communicate.
Yeah, I think we saw that a lot of the original free roam VR games, they basically had you facing away from each other with your backs to each other, shooting enemies, like waves of enemies that were coming at you. So we looked at that and actually we played a lot of those and thought they're kind of boring after a little while, right? Just hordes of enemies. And we're not actually even talking to each other. We're in the same space, but we're not using it effectively. So we really tried to think of ways to not do that. We said, actually, can we make a game without any guns? That was one of our mandates, to try to not have any guns. And so we still have these kind of colored light blasters, I guess. So we're still kind of shooting enemies with these colored lights, but they're robots and it's not...
Signal generator, we call them.
Signal generators, yeah. But anyway, it's not about that. It's about the collaboration. It's about using space really effectively and trying to go on an adventure, basically. You said earlier that the space feels bigger. I'd like to think that we actually took you on an adventure, told a story through space. So like as you're moving through space, you're unfolding the next part of the narrative through spatial motion. And I think that's like one of the great affordances of free roam VR is by moving through space, you can advance through story. You can change where you are in the world and yeah, getting on a platform and moving along the platform to a different location can transport you to the next part of the adventure. So I think that mechanic really resonated with us and we doubled down hard on that, really.
And that's like a theme park that's theme park thinking, right? Like creating these kind of wow moments at different points where you'll come around the corner and then, whoa, there's something there that surprises you or that challenges you. So that's kind of also something we learned from being in that space, which I think is kind of unique. And people love it. People want to have a night out and, you know, they want to feel like they've done something special. And that can be a challenge sometimes in marketing these pieces because, you know, people that aren't like you and I that are really like into these mediums might not organize their night out based on like, let's try virtual reality as a format. But they would maybe leave their house to do something special if it's like you're going to go underwater in a base that's been, you know, stashed under the earth for hundreds of years. And, it'll, you know, you'll feel like you've just gone somewhere completely different. And that's how we try to get them to think about it. And so people really resonated with that. Like, you know, and so we also had these kind of like launch parties where we invited people to dress up and we gave away these colored bandanas that were in the theming of the game. And we, you know, we have this kind of like fun step and repeat banner that they take a selfie in front of and scream and shout. We had a great party here at AWE where we just, I think it was like we went from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. So like 6 hours of people running through this. And it was just like nonstop fun and joy and giggles. And it was great. Like, you know, a fun experience to just like be with that many people who are having a good time with their friends.
Yeah. And so six people can go through at a time and it's a puzzle game. And so there's some sections that have timers. And so if people were to take the longest time, well, just as a question in terms of what happens if they run out of time, did they automatically progress or how do you manage that?
They do. They get automatically progressed. We do. This has been an active debate within our team. So we have a mode like for some operators who kind of think of themselves more as escape room venues, they actually don't want you to automatically progress because they want you to fail and want to try again. You know, like that's part of the...
Or at least some of them that you have an hour and if you don't get an hour, you don't do it. But you just kind of struggle through each step.
But we thought that might be frustrating. We wanted everybody to win and save the earth. So yes, you will be progressed. And then we also have controls that we can kind of like be almost a game master, like a dungeon master there saying, okay, we'll open the door for him. We'll do this for her, like to solve this puzzle. So yeah, that's kind of important to us.
And do you have someone who might be providing tips?
Yes. So we have a mission commander who's a diegetic character. And if you don't solve it, you hear her in your ears. And she's sort of like, think about the order that you turn the lights on or things like that. So she'll do that. And it's really important for people that run these venues that they can be somewhat turnkey. Like ideally they don't have to intervene all the time, so we have to think about our game design so that if it's like if you had to give a hint, it's probably a little bit not the right design choice. But people are very quite a bit in their experience with solving puzzles. Maybe some people, each of our brains works pretty different, so what might be hard for you is easy for me and vice versa. So we, again, that's why we went for the progression. We wanted nobody to feel like they did something wrong or they couldn't get it. So we eventually will progress you.
Yeah, I found that the time that I went through it, I happened to be paired with two people who were not native English speakers, which turned out to be a unique challenge in terms of like, I felt like we weren't able to actually solve the puzzle together at the same time collaboratively because there was like a bit of a communication breakdown. And so we needed perhaps a little bit more help than we would have otherwise had we been able to maybe figure it out on our own.
I heard you. You were like, no, everybody's got to get on the platform at the same time while I move. And then there was a translator in there. And so like, I know that might have been a little frustrating for you, but there's also some of that. That's a social thing where you were playing a role, right? You were playing this role of somebody that was guiding. So we do see that sometimes where like, you know, folks will sort of step forward to say like, I figured this out and I want to share that with you. You may not have been able to like completely transmit that information, unfortunately, because there was a language barrier there, but that's a pretty rare occurrence. And so, yeah, it's always the thing. You don't want to make it too easy, right? What do you think, Mike?
Oh, it's super hard, right? You got to find that sweet spot where people are not bored. It's not too easy, but it's not too frustrating as well. And so we have the kids that come into this, they just breeze through it. I don't know what games they've played that let them figure out our game so easily.
But middle schoolers in particular. Middle schoolers just crush this game.
There's the color theory thing. I think as adults, maybe we've forgotten our color theory or something.
Yes. Well, and also we also realized that our color theory was based on us being in the creative industry. So we do optical color theory where green and blue make cyan, right? And red and green make yellow. Anyway, primary color mixing is different than that, right? Like mixing paint uses a different system. And so
mixing paint different than mixing light.
Yeah, thank you. Mixing paint is different than mixing light. So sometimes kids remember the mixing paint. They'll do that and then they have to kind of like reorient their brain, but they figure it out.
They figure it out way faster than we do. I don't know.
We also had to make affordances for folks who are colorblind too. So there's a symbol system embedded within it. So like green will show up as a triangle.
And so if people were to take the longest that they're allotted to get through it and they basically fail in every stage and take the longest time, how long does it take and what's some of the faster times you've seen?
Yeah, I think it can't take more than like 30, 32 minutes or something like that. And then the fastest we've seen from people that didn't make the game would be 23 minutes. And I know that because we had a contest to do it the fastest on the opening night. And that was the numbers, 23 minutes.
Nice. And so what happens next? Where do you hope to take this here in the future?
Well, so given our theme park experience and dealing with physical worlds, physical props and scenes and embedding special effects and lighting and stuff like that into worlds, we want to take something like Abyss, that's a free roam VR game, and expand it, extend it, elevate it with more physical sets. So the next format, I guess, that we're looking at is like a mixed reality attraction format that might be multiple rooms where you go from room to room and maybe the first room is actually all physical, or maybe the first room is actually your bar, your food and beverage, and you come there early and have a drink and then you're ushered into the experience. And then in the initial rooms, they're physical sets and you play with props and maybe there's some screens embedded in the walls and some special effects, but then you can put on your headset or your dive helmet and it's actually a VR headset and you go into the next room and you play a game that's similar to Abyss Vault. And then still in the headset, you might go to the next room and sit on a motion base, sit on some D-box chairs that vibrate or move around, launch out the escape pod. Because at the end of our game right now, we have like an escape rocket is the final scene. So you'd launch out of that and then, you know, kind of exit through the gift shop. So kind of like a premium experience that operators could install and have like a kind of a ticketed, more elevated night out, not just like a game from the library in your local VR arcade.
Nice. And finally, what do you each think is the ultimate potential for this type of immersive entertainment and what it might be able to enable?
I mean, I think, like experiences like Mike are talking about where somebody might not totally know or even be that worried about what's virtual and what's real in the experience that you're creating, right? So we can get to the point where we can combine like great sets, acting, theater with the virtual, right? And so like you might pass through a door where that is completely virtual and we're able to take advantage of the affordances of that. We're in another room, we're touching things that are real and that ground us, but are layered on top of with the virtual. That kind of stuff that we're starting to see as the headsets get smaller, more lighter, more optimized for high throughput, and the pass-through cameras are making those kinds of things possible. I think that that's going to be kind of its own medium. And the location-based piece of this, I think, is, for me, I don't know, like the ultimate destination, but one piece of this that is going to be very compelling and I think people are going to really respond to.
Yeah, I think the best experiences are where the technology disappears and you don't even know that it's there. And so in that mixed reality experience, we're going to try to hide that technology. And as it gets smaller, you can. And we're here at AWE where now you have, you know, glasses and people are going to start wearing these commonly instead of cell phones. And so I can imagine experiences in the future where you've sort of opted into an experience, but you're not quite sure where it's taking place or when, and you have these glasses on and things are happening, things are guiding you. You know your goals, but you don't really know how to get there. It could be within a theme park environment, but maybe these will start moving into more common spaces that we inhabit, into our parks and into our communities. And that sounds really exciting.
Nice. And is there anything else that Stefan said that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Try location-based VR. You know, like in many cities, there are these either, you know, VR escape rooms or VR adventures. You know, there's obviously now the kind of high-throughput free room. Try that stuff because it's different than the things you might be able to download to the Meta and do at home. So for the immersive community, like if you haven't dipped your toes into the state-of-the-art of location-based VR, I would encourage you to, because it really reignited for me a lot of passion for the medium.
Yeah, exactly. And I think these experiences have been around for a while, but haven't maybe been of the best quality. The graphics weren't quite there yet. The headsets were heavy and clunky. And so if you have tried those experiences in the past, try them again now, because now with the wireless headsets that are not tethered in, or you don't have cables sticking out everywhere, and like, yeah, the pass-through cameras let you see the world beyond, it feels much better now. And you have a lot of interesting experiences coming out these days that are a pretty big shift compared to what we had before. So yeah, try it again.
Awesome. Well, Brett and Mike, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast. And yeah, really excited to see where location-based entertainment goes here in the future. Makes me think of also like Excurio, where they have like 150 people per hour. And like if something like this could be like rearranged to walk more linear through a space and move around, where you can like have these more interactive experiences. But yeah, that seems like the kind of the movie theater of Xara is shaping up to be something like Excurio, and that their throughput targets are around 150 people per hour. In order to get that, you would have to maybe rearrange the spatial arrangement. But I feel like that something like this could start to achieve that if you just kind of re-engineer it to go in a different pathway. So there's different footprints that you can have, but the larger space you can have, the more throughput you can obviously have. But I thought it was certainly the best immersive experience that I saw here at AWE in terms of the most entertaining and engaging. It's transportive. It's like this vast location-based entertainment experience that I think it's, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And also, one of the trends is trying to revitalize civic society by having people come together and work together as humans together. And so I think there's ways in which that piece is kind of encouraging this type of collaborative social gameplay that is pretty rare. I haven't seen as much of it, and I think it's really needed. And also I think is going to be a key part of what makes LBE experiences successful. So best of luck for where you take the Abyss Vault here in the future. And thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you, Ken. Great to have you. And thanks for playing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesvr. Thanks for listening.